It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
We're back.
You're in studio with us this time.
I am. Season 2.
Episode 7.
And I think just before we started, we're thinking we should come up with a good drinking game.
Yeah, because that's what healthcare professionals should have, is a drinking game with your podcast.
Every time you say that was another good interview.
Or I say something about snot.
Or if I grunt a couple times, people have a drink.
Yeah. Well, that could work, but be healthy and safe about it.
Well, drink responsibly and drink warm, cellar temperature beer with flavor.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because we don't want to encourage drinking, but if you're going to be doing it, do it well.
Sure.
Welcome back to Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk. I'm Kirk, right?
I'm Trevor.
Yeah, I'm just back from a 3 weeks journey in the north, so just getting used to cars and walking the streets of Dauphin.
No, good to have you back. So, what are we talking about this week? I think we went somewhere.
Yeah, we're trying to empty the can. We've got all these interviews that we have stored on in little bits and bytes on the CKDM radio station servers, and we're trying to dump some of these interviews out. This is a visit to Winnipeg.
Yeah, we went to the Cannabis and Hemp Expo. I think we decided September 30th.
September 30th, day after my anniversary.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and that's how I remember it. And we had to forsake the Manitoba Podcast Festival to make it to the Expo. Yeah,
they're both at the same time, so hopefully we'll get to that one next year. But now this is so pre-legalization. So again, if the interviews we talk about what's going to happen in a couple weeks, that's why. But I think everything we saw there and everyone we talked to is still really applicable today.
We walked around the different displays and different presenters, and it was really nice to be recognized. People actually do listen.
Yeah, no, there we've got some fans out there.
Yeah.
So Kirk, who are we going to talk to first?
Well, let's talk. Did you get a drink? I just grunted there. We had a really good interview with Save the Ride.
Yeah, no, she was really cool. She had people with her too, but the lady from Save the Ride, she started out in your profession in nursing, and she saw a need.
Yeah, she saw a need. She was doing home care, and she saw a need in people who were using medicinal cannabis that could not get in. There were shut-ins. So she came up with a theme. I mean, I'm a product of the 60s and 70s, and I can remember Dial-A-Bottle. Back in the day, I don't know if they still have that service, but back in the day, you could dial a bottle, and if you were a shut-in, you could have somebody go get your booze for you. So this service is very similar. So she explained her service to us.
She did, and I love some of the examples she used, because you don't think about that if you're not involved with home care. Like, you know, some of these people, literally have no mobility issues to get to where they're going, or... You know what? She talked about a lady who had seizures on her way to the dispensary. Yeah, so this really was a, if not life changer, a significant improvement in quality of life with this service.
It's a good service. It's also, now that we have legalization, I guess if you're too high to drive and you're out of a stash, you could call
Save the Drive.
Save the Drive. So let's listen to her interview.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast.
Hi, introduce yourself.
Chanel Graham. I'm from Save the Drive. And what we were just talking about is my background with home care nursing. I'm an LPN by trade. And the idea of Save the Drive was created because I was working in Vancouver doing home care nursing. And a lot of my clients were having trouble accessing medical marijuana. There wasn't really anything great in place for them. And so I thought, how can we come up with something to help these clients that have mobility issues, they're not feeling well, all of that. And that's where Save the Drive was born.
So your job then is to, you have patients.
Yeah.
And they call you and say, can you please pick me up X strain, X...
So for me at that time, I was just there doing their medical needs, and I was getting a lot of complaints about, you know, I need cannabis, how do I get it, I can't get out. So now with this business, what we've created is something that's good for recreational and for medical users. And so now you sign up with your ID to verify your age.
So I sign up on the web?
Yep.
So what is your URL?
So it's savethedrive.ca.
Okay.
And
you're national now across Canada?
Yeah, we're going to be launching in Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, and Montreal.
When do you launch?
October 17th.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I can go online and say, I am a shut-in, and I would like to have cannabis arrived to my home.
Yeah.
Are you offering any education? Are you offering, what are you doing?
So we can't offer education. We can offer information.
Okay.
That's basically the limit we have.
So is it like a pizza delivery guy or?
It's something similar to that. So what it is a personal shopping platform. It connects the cannabis user with a personal shopper. The personal shopper is then able to act on behalf of the user,
okay,
go to the dispensary of their choice, shop for the products they've chosen, and bring them to the user.
And there's a fee for that?
There is. It's roughly a $7 fee.
Okay. Per gram or per delivery?
Per delivery. Okay. Up to 30 grams is the delivery maximum.
So if there's two people in the house, you can bring them 60 grams.
So per delivery is 30 grams.
Okay.
So what that means is that the driver or the personal shopper themselves can only carry 30 grams maximum
at a time.
That's the law.
Right, okay.
So let's say there was two people in the house and they wanted 60 grams, they would have to make two separate orders.
Okay, all
yeah.
right. Now, as a licensed practical nurse, is there any limitations on your practice doing this?
So I'm not currently practicing as a nurse now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've given your license up, and it's part of your resume, but you're not a licensed nurse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. What else would you like people to know about your business?
I just think that it's very important for people that shouldn't be on the road. Number one, intoxicated.
Okay.
Number two, people that have mobility issues. And then number three, you know, I think that it's important that people know there's a company that exists.
Okay,
like
so that's an interesting. So back in the 70s or 80s, it was dial a bottle.
Yeah.
We could dial a bottle and someone could bring me some booze. So this is what this is. If I could be in the middle of a party and my stash is dead, I'm too drunk to drive, I'll phone Save the Drive and you guys will bring me my cannabis to my house.
Correct.
What a great business model.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Anything else? Anything? Any questions?
How about a really interesting patient or client you've had that, you know, they've decided they couldn't live without, like maybe one of your home care clients. Can you think of anyone in particular who, you know, obviously not their name, but you know, what's the circumstance that they're in and how this really helped them out?
So I had a customer or client in Vancouver that had epilepsy. And so a huge issue was getting out of the house, right? And she had an experience where she tried to go to the dispensary and had an epileptic seizure and ended up with the ambulance called and all types of such a commotion just trying to get her medication. And so that was the experience for me that was like, hey, we really need something available to these people.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you.
Once a nurse, always a nurse. Always providing service.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.
No problem.
All right. Well, that's a good service. I wish I had thought of that.
Yeah. No, she's very smart.
Yeah.
And continuing on with a trend that I think we've got coming up. Notice I said she. Why are all the really smart people we talk to in cannabis she?
Well,
I think the guys need to catch up on this.
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of women in cannabis, and what's happening right now, it seems like a lot of mainstream media is catching on to that, is that there's a lot of women in cannabis. And that's okay, because, you know, I heard a...
Well, it's better than okay. They seem to have all the good ideas.
Well, women have been ruling the world for a long time. Men just think they are. The next one we talked to was the dog whisperer.
Yeah. Brad Pattinson.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes. You got a great memory, man.
For some things. No, he was really neat on many things, and you talked to him more than I did, but I jumped in at the end because in pharmacy world, I make stuff. I compound stuff. And sometimes I compound for pets. And getting stuff into a cat is harder than you'd think because they've got those tiny little pointy teeth. So the fact that he had a good idea for getting a medication into a cat, I needed to hear about that.
Well, how about the chicken?
Yeah, and then the chicken.
The chicken that laid the egg.
The chicken that started laying the eggs. He had some really good stories about, well, CBD and pets.
Yeah, well, and what I found interesting, now this was pre-legalization, right? Pre-October 17th. And I was marveling at the fact that he was sitting there selling CBD products, which technically I think at the time was illegal.
Well, I think it might still be illegal if it's not, if you're still not a licensed retailer. Honestly, we're open to being corrected on that.
Yeah.
So you law people out there, tell us if we got this wrong. But unless you are a licensed reseller, I think is what they're called, I still don't think it's, you know, I still think CBD oil, if it's not, you know, at, say, the Tweed store, I think it's still in the gray zone.
I don't know, man. That's why we did this podcast. We're trying to talk to people that are smarter than us. So I just found it interesting. There it was. There was the product. Yeah, let's listen to him. So we're at the Winnipeg, we're at Brad Pattison's Pet CBD booth at the Winnipeg Expo. Brad, my name's Kirk. Let's talk about CBDs for pets.
Absolutely. So number one, I want to clear one thing up. There is no THC in my product. It's CBD with certified organic hemp oil.
Okay.
All right? And people are finding incredible benefits with CBD for their pets, from helping with seizures, with anxiety, with noise phobias, with pain, inflammation, hip dysplasia, all sorts of different issues that are happening with pets, from lumps being large to shrinking.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And the wonderful thing is, it's bringing peace of mind for so many pet owners. What I don't understand is how the media has grouped CBD with THC or CBD with medicinal marijuana. Those are two different things. They're similar. They're from a plant.
Right.
But you have the hemp plant, and then you have a marijuana plant. So there's a massive conflict of interest for people listening to the information coming from the general pop of the media.
So your CBDs are coming from sativa plants, are they not?
No, it's coming from the hemp plant.
But a hemp plant is... Okay, I hear what you're saying.
We want to keep this clean for the listeners.
But listen, you're correct.
Right?
Right.
So if I was extracting my CBD from a marijuana plant,
yes,
then I'm definitely going to be in the red zone with THC.
Okay.
Which the government and Health Canada have a huge issue with.
So you're using a strain of plant that's high with CBDs.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So that's what you're doing.
Yes.
And you're extracting the CBDs from this hemp plant, from this plant, and you have, and you're giving it to dogs, to pets, to cats.
Yes.
Chickens.
A chicken. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
There's a chicken that started to drink the dog water that had CBD in it and started to lay eggs again.
Right.
Okay. So, who would have known?
It's a miracle plant.
It totally is.
Yeah.
But let's not go back to the 1870s in a covered wagon and somebody sets up a miracle potion.
Snake oil.
But if you look at any of these cannabis shows, you see the professionalism.
Yes.
It's been self-governed by ourselves and the community, like Aurora. If you take a look at Low Cloud, you take a look at somebody like Seven and Oaks, or Bonafi, or CBD Therapeutics, we're all working for the greater good. What I don't understand is, for instance, I've been on stage at a number of these shows. Why is the government not participating at these shows to help educate not just us business owners, but also the general population?
Interesting question.
Why is Health Canada not working with the community with education? Education is pivotal here.
Yeah.
Without education, we have nothing.
Right.
We have rules and laws and, oh my gosh, you're going to jail or you're going to get fined. And now there's this fear-mongering that is not helping people. And here's my argument. I know of an elderly grandmother, a great-grandmother. If she cannot get access to CBD, just CBD, she's not getting high. She cannot knit sweaters for her great-grandchildren. Her greatest joy in life right now is knitting sweaters for her last four great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
So to classify or categorize CBD as this poison, as this hallucinogenic drug, when it comes from a simple plant.
True.
And in my own personal opinion, there's way too much negativity and
but you're focusing on making pets happy, right? Your business is Brad. You're making pets.
No,
you're not bettering the lives of pets.
Yes, That is a fraction of what I'm doing.
Okay.
This is about wellness for the owner.
Yeah.
Because people now are having less children, more pets.
Yes.
A pet is not a PET anymore. A DOG, a CAT, that's not it. It's a companion. And I'm a television host from 3 different television shows. I'm an author from 4 books. I've been in the pet industry for 30 years. And a pet is much deeper emotionally ingrained into a person's life more than ever today. So my question to government, my question to the authorities is, how does this make any sense that you're taking CBD and you're categorizing it as a Schedule 1 or a Schedule 2 drug?
Right.
You're not getting stoned. You're not going to be driving drunk. You're not going to be doing anything wrong.
When I look at your products, and I want to focus on the pets.
Yes.
You've got 3 different levels of products for different pets.
Correct.
So this is obviously pet focused, pet centric.
Yes.
But are these the same oils that humans can take? Are these safe for humans?
Yes, they are.
So what makes these pet centric? What makes your product pet centric?
We labeled it for pets.
Okay.
People want peace of mind. If you take a look, and I'll. We were using certified organic hemp oil.
Right.
That is the cleanest oil you can get.
Okay.
We're not using organic. Organic is a little bit, well, it's just different.
Yes.
And then we have non-GMO. We have French on our labeling. We have a barcode. We have an expiration. So this gives peace of mind to our buyers.
Is this legal today? Because, I mean, to be a CBD user in Canada today, you have to have a medical license, right? You have to have a green card.
Yes, but this is for pets, and the conversation around pets is in a gray zone or a gray area that I've heard time and time again.
Right.
And I understand, if we can just take a side note to veterinarians, I understand that some veterinarians don't agree with this. They want more testing. I want more testing.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
It's sort of like, it's on the medical side. Doctors want more testing for the whole human consumption
process. Yes.
Yes.
But instead of starting at step one, go to Jerusalem, go to Israel, and speak to the Mecca of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's out there. We don't need to start to recreate the wheel.
Right. So you've got your product sitting here for pets.
Correct.
So there's no law that says you can't do this for pets. It's an interesting, you're in a gray zone because you can't sell this currently to me. I don't have a green card. So I could not buy a CBD oil for me.
I don't know that answer.
Okay.
I honestly don't know the answer because it's been a yo-yo effect for weeks and months.
Yeah.
And as much as I appreciate the Trudeau government bringing marijuana into the legalization stage, but what does that mean? Because what I'm hearing from more and more businesses is it's not legal as we've been led to believe. So what does legalization of marijuana, what does legalization of CBD or medicinal marijuana mean?
That's a very good
question.
What
does it actually mean?
So that's 500 milligrams in this jar of 30 mils.
Yep.
And that one is 1,500.
Correct.
Okay, so they're the same concentration per mil. They're just bigger jars.
Yes.
So,
well, in this one, this one's a little richer. This is 500 milligrams compared to 300 milligrams.
Oh, okay. Okay. So this is five. So I got an anxious. What is it? That there is a
Australian Shepherd.
Australian Shepherd. He's anxious. So
yes.
I put a drop on his kibble.
Ah, good question. You would take of the 500 milligram, because Rocket is 50 pounds, you would give her 0.3 of a milligram. Once a day.
Okay.
And
that will make her less anxious.
Yes, absolutely. Here's some fascinating things. I mean, okay,
you're very passionate.
Our cat people today, we've had so many cat people come to the show, and the number one issue is anxiety with cats. We have one cat owner. They're like, we have to be careful. If we're late coming home, the cat will attack us from above.
Wow.
Yeah. So they make sure that their cat gets 0.1 ml of CBD every day, so the cat is not so crazy.
Well, my wife had a cat.
How do you convince a cat to take that? What do you?
So for our cat owners, we actually suggest that they put it on, they put it on the paw, because then the cat will lick it.
Groom it off. Okay.
Ah.
Yes. I did not come up with that. That was from a cat owner
that's
in Vancouver.
Brilliant. As a pharmacist, I actually sometimes make medications for cats. And the best we come up with is we have a long, skinny syringe so you can get it to their mouth without their sharp teeth getting at them. Putting it, they lick it off their own fur. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So it's fun to hear the testimonials from people about how dogs and cats and horses and chickens and pigs have been happier. They get their puppy back and the dog is 13 or 14 years old. It's a beautiful story.
How long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing CBDs for pets?
About 15 months.
15 months. So it's brand new business.
It is.
Yeah.
I lost my dog to cancer and I moved into this space and I...
Is that Rocket? Is that the one?
Or this is my new puppy.
Okay.
Kaya was a border collie, only 11 years old, that passed away from cancer.
Okay.
Her other dog friend, Cooper, now has the exact same cancer. Cooper was supposed to be euthanized 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Cooper's still alive on my CBD.
Wonderful, man. Thank you very much. Very much. Thank you. Now, the third one. this is geekdom, right? This is the geek pharmacist walking up to this.
I prefer nerd.
Nerd. Okay, pardon me. Nerd pharmacist walking up to this fella who is another nerd. You got to tell the story. I sat back and just laughed. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah, Dr. Brent Guppy. And I love your last name, Dr. Guppy. He's got a PhD with genetics. I think there was some pharmacology in there, but mostly genetics. And he had been in Europe for a number of years looking at the genetics of different cultivars. Here, more words.
Great name.
So
now what's a cultivar?
And I can be corrected on this too. I think that just the more proper word for strain. So the different types of cannabis out there have different genetics. And he, through some of the work he'd been doing in Europe, bringing it back to North America because of legalization in Canada, is now he can go into your licensed producer and go, okay, if you want to develop a strain that has tons of CBD, these are the genes you should be looking for. If you want to have something that has really high myrcene, one of the terpenes in there, here's the genetics you've been looking for. Or you say to him, I've got this one strain that everybody really likes, and he can do the genetics on that too. So the genetics of the cannabis plant.
Cool.
Sure. So my name's Dr. Brent Guppy. I have a PhD in biochemistry and medical genetics, and I'm currently the president and the chief scientific officer at Synthase Genetics. And basically what we do here is we work with legal producers to develop new strains of cannabis with specific medically relevant properties. So we would go to a legal producer's grow facility, look at the types of strains that they have available. We'll do a genetic analysis on those strains to look at the specific genes that drive the cannabinoids content and the terpene content within each strain. So we specifically look at kind of two classes of genes, the cannabinoid synthase genes. These are the genes responsible for driving the THC, the CBD, the CBG. We also look at the other gene class, the terpene synthase gene class. These are the ones that are driving some of the terpenes, some of the limonene, the myrcene. And what we do is we identify from their candidate breeding stock optimal breeding pairs to bring together that will produce a new strain that has a custom cannabinoid profile, a custom terpene profile, and therefore a custom medicinal effect. And that's done much rapid than the classic way of doing it, which is kind of based
trial and error.
Exactly, trial and error, exactly. And it's like throwing darts in the dark, really, whereas we're doing more data-driven approach. We're empirically looking at the genes that drive these levels of cannabinoids and terpenes within the plant, and that way we can accomplish a new strain much quicker than the classical approach.
So if you did develop like a new gene strain instead of just a new phenotype, could they patent it? What do we know about patentability and genes?
Sure. So I believe if you wanted to look at in terms of patents and patenting cannabis, I believe the Purple Kush, they attempted to patent at one point. I think there is actually a U.S. patent for that specific strain. But you can imagine if you develop something that's really novel, something that's really sought after, that you would want to protect your property. You'd want to protect with a license or with a patent. And how would you do that? Well, one way would be to basically doing a genome sequencing on the plant. Because the genome is really the blueprint of the plant.
Right.
So if you were to do something like a whole genome sequencing of that plant, you could use that information for patent protection. So if someone was to take your licensed product, copy it, try and pass it off as their own, you could take a sample of their product, determine the DNA fingerprint of that product, and if it matched yours, then you would know that they're infringing on your patent, on your property right there. So
cool. And so we know there's like could be hundreds of different cannabinoids and maybe more terpenes. How many of them do you know, you know, this gene links to that terpene?
Right, right.
Do you know like 2, 12, 100?
For sure, for sure.
What do you guys know so far?
Right, so certainly that area of research is still young, but it's emerging. And I would say with a high degree of certainty, you can correlate certain cannabinoid synthase genes, I would say upwards about 10 right now of the 120. And then roughly about 28 of the terpene synthase genes.
Oh, that's now, more than I would have thought.
Exactly. And as the data comes in, it's becoming more and more robust, and we're getting more of that one-to-one correlation that this gene controls the output of this terpene. What we're also realizing now is not necessarily a one-to-one. It's not that limonene synthase only produces limonene.
Okay.
There's other terpenes within that family that it's affecting as well. So some of these enzymes are not only creating one type of terpene, but creating a couple of types of terpenes as well. So it's not necessarily a one-to-one enzyme to chemical, but rather a one enzyme that can control several, that can produce several different types of terpenes as well.
So we've been getting this question, has come up a lot, is about difference between sativa and indica plants, and you know, indica's in the couch, but it sure seems like it doesn't matter necessarily the strain and more towards the genes and what cannabinoids are produced. Any thoughts about genetics versus strains?
Right, yeah, so our idea of indica and sativa, I think, is very fuzzy, and I think there's a lot of people in the industry believe that sativas are more uplifting and indicas are more of the couch lock, but really it's whatever people call them, either whether they're high sativa percentage or indica percentage, that doesn't really matter. And in fact, it's kind of a misnomer, I guess you could say.
So high CBDs from an indica plant or high CBDs from a sativa plant, you're going to get the same effect.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, those are just terms. Like this indica, sativa, to me, they're just marketing terms. They don't really speak to the genetic origin of
the
plant.
It's so much part of the nomenclature.
I know, and it's an erroneous part of the nomenclature, because what they're really referring to when someone says sativa has an uplifting effect, they're really referring to the cannabinoid terpene profile, which classically was more attributed to the landrace sativas. Whereas the indicas derived from India had more of a myrcene content, which is the terpene that's more associated with that analgesic kind of relaxing effect, and also high THC levels in the indicas as well. So what people are calling indicas and sativas is actually categorically false, and really doesn't allow us to really say how that strain is going to affect you medically. It's really about the cannabinoid profile and the terpene profile that's going to give you that specific medicinal effect.
And putting on our crystal ball for the moment, what do you see going forward with what we'll call it genotypic and phenotypic changes? Sure. in the cannabis plant?
Yeah, sure. So because this is an industry that's essentially 70 years behind normal agricultural practices, we're going to start to see new strains coming out that are going to be really testing the biological limits of the cannabis plant. Cannabis in the 70s, we're looking at a 3% THC content. Now you can see strains upwards of 27%, 30%. So there's going to be a ceiling. So we're going to find that ceiling. We're going to find out how these genes are interacting with each other. What are the chemical limits of each strain? Can you get high CBD with high THC, or is there kind of a balance between those two in terms of the bioproduction of these types of molecules in the plant? So it's really going to be, I think it's going to be a marriage of the understanding of medicine, the understanding of plant genomics, and how those kind of come together to produce specific medicinal effects to give specific relief to certain symptoms and conditions.
Well, I was just
going
I was thinking about what you said about the percentages. We talked to a chemist, and in her analytical chemistry said that cannabis is so different because we usually talk about parts per million in chemistry and genetics, right? But in cannabis, we're talking about percentage. So if I got a gram of bud in my hand and it's 27%, it's by weight, is it not?
Yeah, it's weight by weight.
So I guess the question is, can you have 100% THC plant?
Well, I think that'd be pretty odd if we planted a seed and a bunch of oil started oozing out of the ground. But,
but
certainly the biological limits will be tested because, you know, you need energy in the plant to not just produce oil. You have to produce leaf growth.
Chlorophyll.
Exactly. Yeah. Photosynthesis, photosynthetic enzymes, hardiness, certainly trichome density. These are other genes that are important to us that we also are interested in looking at. Not just the genes that drive cannabinoid and terpene production, but also genes that are associated with resistance to pest, vigor, hardiness, stalk diameter, things like that, trichome density. These are other genes that are of our interest and that we look at as well.
And I guess wrapping up, anything else you think our listeners should just know about cannabis genetics? So for your average recreational or medicinal user, why should they care about the genetics going into developing the next strain?
For sure. So I think because we were really looking at more of a classical approach with classical breeding techniques, which really is an art form. I have great respect for these kind of master breeders, master growers, because they have an intimate knowledge of how that plant grew from seedling to basically to flower. And they are able to compare qualities between strains, and they do it on a subjective basis, which really takes a keen eye and really a connoisseur's touch. So there's still a place for these types of master breeders, master growers. But what we would like to do is really marry that art form with like data-driven science. And that's where we come in. At Synthase Genetics, we can go on and actually look at the genes that produce these types of chemicals and pair with breeders to identify those really unique strains. And we can also go on to stabilize those unique strains that they have so that when they're creating these custom strains that they're providing seeds to legal producers or to home cultivators, and that those seeds have a very consistent homogeneous genetic profile so that you're getting consistent canopy height, you're getting consistent terpene profiles, consistent cannabinoid profiles, and it's just gonna reduce lot-to-lot variability, and people are gonna be happy that they're getting consistency between each growth cycle.
So what is your PhD in?
Biochemistry and medical genetics.
Okay, and so how long have you been doing this?
So we've been accumulating data since 2006. The company's relatively new. We started in January of this year.
Okay.
My background is also in the pharmaceutical drug development and discovery, where I did that in Europe for a couple of years. And then with the announcement of legalization in Canada, we thought we would take all our data that we've been accumulating for over the past 12 years and turn it into a company that can really help the industry. And really a gap in the whole industry is having this data-driven science-backed new strain development.
And what's been the response?
Great.
Yeah,
absolutely great. This was a great convention. We met with a lot of really interesting people, people that are developing new genetics, people that want to have their strains stabilized, people with specific medical conditions that maybe don't really know which terpenes are tailored for their specific medical condition. They want some advice on that. Because we have a background in medicine, we can provide that advice and kind of direct them along the way.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that we got to put the call out again for a botanist because we need to talk to a botanist as well. And
yeah,
I guess
to explain a cultivar to us.
But yeah, so there are people out there that are starting to get into niches of this marketplace. Right. And this is what I think is so cool about this, about cannabis becoming legal in Canada. We're creating a brand new industry and these things are popping up. Another guy we met briefly. I'm sorry. Enough time with Dr. Guppy?
Yeah. We're good on Guppy.
We're good on Guppy. It's a great name.
Synthase Genetics. Sorry, we might as well mention the company
name
too.
Say that again.
Synthase Genetics.
Synthase Genetics. I got to get that tongue working. Now, the other guy, and this was just a conversation we didn't record, but a guy now in Winnipeg has a portable chemist lab, right?
Yeah, he came up to us and gave us, after we were talking to everyone, you guys want my card. And yes, of course we want your card.
Someday we'll call you because we got too many stories here. We got so many stories in the can that we got to get to. And please be patient with us. Those people that we've interviewed, we have a plan to get you up hopefully before Christmas. Now, one other interview we got on tape was with...
The 420 group in Winnipeg.
Yes. And I kind of...
So just in case nobody... People don't know. Kirk, tell us a little bit. What's 420? What's the history of 420? What does 420 mean?
Well, 420 comes from California back, in the 1970s, a group of kids from a school used to meet at 420 at a statue. Now, I don't have the Wikipedia in front of me, but essentially these four guys used to meet at 420 in the afternoon. And smoked a reefer, and that name just sort of carried on. So 420 is April 20th, and what happens now across the Western world is there's sit-ins, right?
So and this one in Winnipeg, I forget how many years, but it's been a number of years. They have one at the legislative building, basically saying, you know, cannabis should be legal. So for the last decade or so, this is what they do.
Yes, and this is going across Canada. I mean, I never seem to be able to be around someplace to get there. Usually around April 20th, I'm in the north, usually because the middle of April is working time for me. But this year we had the conversation, well, what's going to happen when cannabis is legal? I'm sorry, what are we going to do with Prohibition 2.0, cannabis in Manitoba, where you can't smoke cannabis anywhere? Except maybe your house. Maybe your house. If you got small children, maybe you shouldn't. I don't know.
Yeah, and he talked about how, frankly, relatively easy it's been when cannabis was illegal to get it's like a parade permit to an event permit to be at the legislative grounds. And the police didn't bother them and they got all the right permits and it was relatively easy. What happens now? You guys got onto the big festival in Manitoba at Birds Hill Park.
Right.
What happens there? So, it was a good conversation.
Yeah, let's have a listen to that one.
It's Reefer Madness.
My name is Nathan. I am the VP of Community Outreach for the Winnipeg 420 Organizing Committee.
Okay, so you're very aware of what's happening with legalization of cannabis in Manitoba.
Yes, sir.
And you're aware of the new fines that are coming up.
Yes, sir. They're pretty high.
So how do you think your event's going to change with the new coming legislation where they're going to hand out fines for public smoking?
It'll really depend on how that works. I mean, again, this event has been going on for a long time. It is definitely civil disobedience. Even if the organizing committee weren't involved at all, there would still be people there smoking on the legislature at 420.
Right.
They're not going to start arresting people because that would be just a really bad news day. And let's be fair, the Jets are probably going to be in the playoffs again. They'll have more important things to worry about.
Okay, and you're right. You know, how are they going to arrest 1,000 people, right?
They're not going to.
No, they're not going to, and they haven't. And they haven't.
They haven't. The Winnipeg Police Department is pretty good about that kind of thing for the most part.
However, with the coming new legislation, I mean, let's look at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. How many people enjoy their medicine at the Winnipeg Folk Festival?
Right, exactly.
Right? So, and officers have walked by and smiled, right? But with the new coming legislation, do you foresee officers actually fining people?
Probably not at that event.
No?
Because, again, it's a case where it's too many people to really get to. I could see them maybe making a token here or there, but for the most part, I don't know. I don't think they'll be...
It's interesting, though, isn't it? I don't really think they're
going to go out of their way to enforce these laws.
No, well...
I don't think they'll go out of their way. I think they'll be the sort of laws that they'll enforce. They pulled you over, or they're dealing with you for another reason.
So in the 420 2019, you don't foresee guys making their quota for the month, getting all their fines out of the way?
I don't think so. Like, I really don't, and I think we may have to...
How would you respond as an organization if they did? How would you respond?
Well, we might have to make ourselves a medical event this year.
Ah, so okay.
Because if we're a medical event, honestly, I can't see us getting permitting if we were recreational, necessarily. I mean, maybe we'll be able to work that out. So if we can, that would be awesome.
So when
but I think it's far more likely that we're medical.
So what kind of permits were you getting when it was against the law?
Standard. We were getting I'm not actually sure of the exact nature of the permits.
Okay.
I was only involved with that a little bit last year personally.
You know what? Thank you for...
And how about just a promo thing? Tell us anything exciting coming up for 420 2019.
There'll be stuff coming, and obviously there'll be 420 this year, but we're hoping to get more events off the ground.
in the future.
Where's the best place for people to find the 420 organization?
Probably on Facebook right now.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for doing this. So that was interesting, right? And it almost makes me want to go back to our Burt's Hill Folk Festival. I haven't been to one in a couple of years. I think I've probably been to five or six of them over the last four decades. My first Folk Festival was 1980. Stan Rogers was playing, and Tony Bird.
I think last year Stan's son was up there.
Probably, yeah. And Stan, I'm trying to think of the other fella, Van Zandt was playing. I picked up a lot of my musical interests back in 1980. Anyways, I digress, Bird's Hill.
Shocking.
Strain print. Let's talk about strain print.
Yeah, one of the really cool things that I've been reading with strain prints getting involved in an endometriosis study. So endometriosis, quick version, jumping if I get this wrong, it's when the lining of the uterus sort of leaves the uterus and grows places not supposed to, and you get lots of extra pain and bleeding.
Yes.
I think it's a short version.
Yes.
And I hadn't even thought about using cannabis for endometriosis, but apparently some people have, and it's worked. But this isn't just anecdotal evidence. They're getting involved in doing an actual study, because what does strain print do really well? Collect data.
They're a data machine. We promoted strain print in season one. You can go to the Advocates and listen to Strain Print's interview. It was a fabulous one, and we become sort of friends online with Strain Print, and they are sponsoring this show. And so we encourage people to go to strainprint.ca and download the app. We encourage you to download it if you're using cannabis as medicine, because it allows you to track your use. I'm encouraging people to use it recreational because, again, I declared in my belief in doing this podcast that cannabis is medicine all the time.
You have. Back to the medicinal bit, as you mentioned it before, you know, both of us have experience with diabetic logs. This really, if you're a medicinal user, this is kind of your diabetic log for your cannabis. This strain affected me how? So it really is one of these, why didn't I think of that, moments, an app for tracking your cannabis use. That's fantastic.
As a recreational recreational user of cannabis, I want to start using cannabis with searching out terpenes and stuff. And we talked about that in the last episode, how you can now burn cannabis with vaporizers at different temperatures to get different effects. So Strain Print, guys, good product.
It's free, download it, try it.
Yeah, and all they're doing is gathering data that's only going to make cannabis more legit out there. Now, talking about legit, we have a My Cannabis story this time.
So it was someone you were talking to, and I like this story. So he started out doing what?
Well, I'll let him tell us. But this is a classic situation, Trevor, where cannabis is a new industry.
Yeah.
So people are dropping into the industry from way out there in other things.
All over the place.
Now, this story is about a gentleman that discovered the industry. So I want to put a little caveat in there. Now, there are lots of people that have been in the cannabis industry through the medicinal side as ACPMR growers and people that have basically blood, sweat, and tears, who are the diehards that actually promoted and pushed the government. And we learned in our last episode that any changes in cannabis
required a lawsuit.
So the people that did that, a lot of those guys, because of the way the government has unfolded legalization of cannabis across the country, a lot of those people have been sort of left out. We're going to talk to them and we're going to get stories on them in the future. So please be patient with us. This story is about a fella who jumped from one industry to another. So let's listen to this gentleman. This is, he calls himself Delta 9 Daniel. Let's listen to Delta 9 Daniel.
Let's have a listen.
I was actually in sales.
Okay.
Yeah, so my background actually was car sales, door-to-door sales, phone sales.
Okay.
I did all the sales.
All right.
So one day I was just sitting there and bored at work, selling cars, couldn't find a client. And then just going down the Winnipeg Free Press, and I noticed that there was a legalization about to occur, and there was a licensed producer called Delta 9. And I thought to myself, wow, there's a lot of car salesmen out there, probably in the thousands. I wonder how many pot salesmen there are.
Yeah, yeah.
One, two, maybe legally none.
Yeah.
So none legally, and I was the first. So
congratulations.
So thank you. So I applied for the job, applied for the role, got it, came here, and we'll never look back.
All right. Go ahead and say it.
I love stories like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to hear more medicinal stories, so keep them coming in. You know, I had Syndrome X. I took cannabis. Yeah. I got better. I want to hear more. Those are fascinating because I always learn something from those. But give us your other cannabis stories, too. There's got to be a bunch of interesting entrepreneurs out there who are doing, oh, I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
Or I jumped into the cannabis industry because we want to hear them all.
I have heard so many anecdotal people with arthritis. I mean, I think I read a paper or a new study out there. They've actually discovered that cannabis may actually shrink the inflammation of arthritis.
Well, yeah, and we talked about that a little bit with our researcher a while ago. Let's see if I get it right. I think it is the C2 of the receptors that
CBD2 receptor?
Yeah, is the anti-inflammatory part.
Yes, right. That's the anti-inflammatory. That's correct. And what they've discovered now is that we've hearing stories that people are actually getting less inflammation from their arthritis. Now, these are anecdotal, but I don't know where I saw this. I mean, I'm reading so much stuff online, and I'm going into deep literature on this. Someplace, somewhere, someone's doing a study and discovered that it actually decreases the swelling. It may actually decrease the swelling, but I'm getting anecdotally that it is. I mean, I've got patients that I deal with that I'm not allowed because of confidentiality to discuss or interview because I'm in a role, but they've told me in their history gathering that they smoke cannabis for the last 5 years because of their arthritis. So if you're out there and you're doing cannabis because your arthritis, let us know, because we're getting people that are saying, I want to hear more of my stories.
Yeah.
We can only give them if you give us the stories.
Yeah. Send us our stories to the website, www.reefermed.ca. Click on My Cannabis Stories. All the info is there about how to send us stuff.
And online, let us know where you're listening to us. We know that you're in Mongolia. There's someone in Mongolia that downloaded 2 episodes. Someone in South Africa that's downloaded stories. Santa Fe, I think, is the third largest city that's been listening to us.
Yeah, and we've got Southern Ontario up to Northern Alberta to, you know, all across Canada. So, yeah, let us know. Let us know where you're listening. Yeah. And, you know, it'd be actually really cool. Take a selfie of us, of you listening to us in your hometown, and we'll post that.
We'll post it, certainly. Yeah, do that. Let's do that. What a good idea.
Every once in a while.
Just spark. Turn the light off. All right. Well, today's song, we're still in the 100-mile diet. Someone said that Dauphin didn't have an art scene. My God. How many episodes we're on to now? Like lots?
Like lots.
Like lots, man.
And I think you listened to this one first
at a folk festival
in the area.
And her family, actually, the Kelwood Harvest Sun Music Festival happens in August every year. Alana Lewandowski. This is from her album Lions and Werewolves. I love this song. It's Red Rover. Another talented person from the Parkland region.
Yep. Let's have a listen to Alana.
And we should talk about cannabis tourism in Dauphin.
Yeah, that's coming.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next.
See, the doors are crimson now to protect your firstborn children. How am I gonna be passed over? Red Rover. See, I got no sons or daughters playing on the teeter totter. So how am I gonna be passed over? Red Rover. And I broke a lot of rules. Yeah, man, I've been such a fool. Burning with the blues. Am I gonna be passed over? Red Rover. Not gonna wrap my legs around no deal. Not gonna tidy up the way I
What's going to happen now? It, you know, are we just going to have the fine snot out, snot okay. the fines out of us instead?
The snot out of us. Okay, you haven't said that in a few.
No.
I think we should come up with a token game. Every time you say that was that was another good interview,
yeah.
And
snot,
and I go every time you hear Kirk go.